Okay, so anybody got anything else? All right, so this is the second one in the economic vision series, the first today of the second in the series. So far we did, we just talked about values and came up with four, actually five, the solidarity, equity, participatory self-management, and diversity, and then also efficiency and actually meeting needs and developing potentials. We talked about them and got some broad understanding of them. And we talked about what you do with them, i.e. you try and create institutions that will fulfill them. We talked about class and classlessness. We used those values to evaluate existing economies, which had two lessons to it. One was to actually see what the evaluation of the economies was. The second lesson was to actually see what it means to have a value. That is, if you have a value, don't just say it and throw it out the window. Having a value means asking whether or not institutions fulfill the value. And if they don't, well, then you don't like them. Or else you might as well go back and see whether or not you really like the value. You can't simultaneously have a value and favor institutions that squash the value. So we sort of understood what the real link is between values and institutions. So now what we want to do is talk more about actually implementing these values in an economy, in particular this time in the workplace of an economy. Obviously, we're not going to do a gigantically detailed job with the economic vision, but I do want to get the arguments and the sentiments that arise and the feelings about the problems with this kind of approach. I want to at least deal with that, and maybe a little bit more. And more people than ever before seem to be familiar with the details of these things, so I'm just going to quickly summarize some of that rather than tease it out. You can do it in three sentences. In a participatory economic workplace, we're going to have remuneration according to effort and sacrifice. We said what that was. So that means people are getting paid, getting a share of the income. Right? That's what payment is. That's what income is. I mean, a share of the product. Your income is sort of, what is it? It's your entitlement to a piece of the economic output, the piece of the economic pie. If we think of the product of society as this gigantic friggin' pie, right? You get a certain size sliver. That's what your income is. Gives you the now we can make the pie, lots of pies, and you can choose among them, but you're still getting a sliver, you're getting a certain amount. That's what your income is. The thing that gives you the amount of your consumption. And the question is, what determines that? Well, we reject property, we reject marginal product, i.e. output, we reject bargaining power, we settle on effort and sacrifice. And then the second thing we're going to do is we're going to look at the division of labor. We obviously have already decided that we don't like a division of labor which gives all the boring, rote, tedious, unempowering work to some and a monopoly on the empowering work to others. So instead of that, we're going to do a balanced job complex. We'll have to clarify a little bit to see exactly what that means. We're going to have decisions made by councils of workers. That's all we have is workers. So all we can have is gatherings of workers because there isn't anything else, right? We got rid of coordinator class. We got rid of the capitalist class. We can only have workers because that's all there is. So we have to have bodies of workers. We have to call those councils. They can be small, a little team, right? They can be bigger, a section, a division, the whole workplace, the whole damn industry. And we're going to have decisions made by those bodies of workers, or individuals even. And what's the mnemonic? Well, people should have influence on decisions in proportion to the degree they're affected. And that's basically going to be the picture of the workplace. And then the implications for the rest of the economy are going to be that the allocation system has to be compatible with that. Even getting to the end of the story, we know from something that we said earlier that neither markets nor central planning are compatible with that. Because both markets and central planning impose a division of labor and the coordinator class structure on the workplace. So if we actually settle on this as our model for how production should be done, we can't have the other for allocation. All right, let's go back though and ask about remuneration. There's two issues with respect to remuneration. Remuneration being, again, sort of how much you get for what you're doing. One issue is moral, and one issue is more economic. We call it an incentive issue, right? So the moral issue is just what's right. What's just, what's right, what's moral. It's a subjective matter, but maybe we can quickly agree on it. The other one is more objective. It has to do with whether or not the way you're rewarding people is eliciting the kinds of behaviors that you need to elicit in order to do what? Well, the economic function, in order to get things produced so that people can consume them. It doesn't do any good to have something that's morally good that leads to no production and we all starve to death. That's what most people think we're advocating. Right? That's what most people think the left is advocating. Well, we're advocating good morals, whoop-de-doo. We're also advocating something that'll leave us with no food. And so, it's, you know, they're not too interested in that. So we have to do better than that. So suppose, just as a little thought experiment, suppose you were put in charge of a marathon, and there's lots of people running in the race, and you want to try and get, what do you want to try and get? Fast times, right? You want to try and get fast times, and you've got a bundle of money to use for as prizes, incentives. You're trying to elicit fast times. So we're really talking. I'm not talking about the moral part at all. I'm just talking about the incentive economic part. First of all, if you're typical of our current society, how do you apportion the money to the prizes in order to elicit the good times? Yeah.
90% first place, maybe.
And then?
You know, goes down from there.
Down to where? To the 50th place?
No, you don't get anything for the bottom.
Yeah, fit. Well, it goes a little further than third, but you see it, a big one, a smaller one, a little bit, down around 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, nothing. And then there's 400,000 more runners. Well, no,
t-shirt.
You know, there's 4,000 more runners. Hmm?
And a t-shirt.
And a t-shirt?
Yeah.
Oh, you can get a t-shirt. Yeah. Okay. Well, assuming that, you know, we're not biologically so disposed to t-shirts that that's a powerful incentive. We'll leave that out. So that's the way we apportion the money. Now, what is the incentive effect of that? Now, let's look at, instead of just looking at what they say, let's ask whether or not this, what incentive does this give people? Yeah.
If you don't think you can finish first, you may not necessarily try as hard as you would have if you thought you had a chance at the first place position.
Okay. What happens if you're likely to finish 27th?
You know you're not going to get anything.
What's your incentive?
You have very little.
Right. So the reward, at least, has given you no incentive to do anything. Your incentive is basically to stay home. Right? This is interesting. So the capitalist approach, which they brag about their incentives, has incentives only for those people who think they can come in the top five, but not even that. Suppose you are really, really, really fast, right? And the rest of the field, there's some good runners, but you're just out of space. What's your incentive?
Not very much.
No, you have some incentive. What's your incentive?
The money. To just be faster than the
second place. The only incentive is to run a little faster than second place, right? Because that's the only, you get it all, right? Well, what happens if you're running in the race and it's stretched out and you're here and the next one's here and then, you know, you only have an incentive to go a little faster than this person. If you can't pass the next one, right? That's the way those incentives work. So this is a pretty shitty incentive system. Most people have no incentive to do anything. Even the people who are really fast only have an incentive to go a little faster than the person that's right behind them, right? Okay, so suppose that we really want, and what corresponds, if we're going to use this analogy, it's not perfect, but it is instructive. What corresponds to we're trying to get production out of the workplace? What are we trying to get out of the race?
The average time of all the contestants.
As what? As low as possible. We're trying to get the fastest possible sum total result in some sense, right? Okay, what are you going to do with the money to provide incentives? Nothing moral here. I want to know. Anybody got an idea of a different way to use the money to try and elicit something better? Yeah.
Incentive for everybody.
Well, do it. It's well and good to say it, but you've got to come up with the prize structure. What's the prize structure?
It's just a lot closer than if you had 10 incentives for 500 people. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean have it, but you've still, in every case, you're only giving somebody the incentive to beat the next person, the person a step behind.
Have it based on production that a person who runs it over this period of time qualifies for X amount or whatever all the way through it, so it's not just, you know, beating the other guy, but you run into the same problem with that if they go, you know, if it's you get paid a certain amount to run it in 3 hours, it's like, what time is it? Okay, you know, they're still going to
I'll go have a beer at this corner because,
yeah.
Okay, so we don't have it yet. What else?
You have to make everyone depend on everyone else, so nobody wins any prize unless everybody's time gets increased.
Well, that's one way, but then you'd have to know in advance what the total time has to be. That's actually an interesting answer that nobody's ever given, but we're not going to accept it. So let's just move on, and then we'll come back and see what happens with that one. What else? That's too good an answer at this level, at this stage. What else is there? What are you trying to get from each runner?
Fastest time.
Improved.
The fastest time from for who? For that runner. So, what do we do?
Well, you reward based on total time.
Improvement.
Of who? Of the person?
Say it louder.
Well, of the person.
Relative to what?
A fixed scale.
But if it's a fixed scale, then let's say you're rewarding X dollars for going, you know, this fast. How does it elicit the best from me? I'll just go that fast and get the X dollars. In other words, it's just like the first
well,
place
if you go
thing.
Faster, then so you get Y dollars. And
okay, that's.
After that, you get Z dollars.
Okay, but now let's put some morals into it and see if we can hold it.
Do you reward based on effort and sacrifice?
Well, how do you do that?
I measure the sweat.
Okay, but in the real world, what's the only way you can do it?
Product.
Product meaning what?
How much you're producing.
Well, what we're producing is just fast-moving legs until we get
okay,
to the finish line.
The
yeah, we're still in the analogy.
Personal best.
Yeah. Suppose you reward people according to their personal best. Now, what's the incentive to the fastest runner?
To beat the personal best.
Yeah, and the more they beat it by, the more they get. And the less they beat it by, the less they get. And it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. That person has to try and run as fast as they can. Or they're not going to get any place. Right? They could come in first and get nothing. Because they're so fast, right? That they're not really exerting, they're running well less than their personal best. The slow runner could come in 87th and get the biggest prize because they're running way better, right? If the seconds all count the same, if the slow runner has run 4 minutes faster than they ever ran before and everybody else is only running, right? They've done the best. Is it clear? And what are we rewarding here? Oddly enough, we're rewarding effort and sacrifice.
Have you ever suggested this to the LA Marathon or
Boston.
Well, but they aren't trying to get the lowest possible time.
I know, I'm joking.
But it is important to notice. They're not trying to get the lowest possible time. They're trying to get the TV coverage and the star thing and everything else. If they were trying to get the lowest possible time, they still wouldn't think of this. But, you know, that's a sidebar. Not because it's complicated, but because it's so contrary to the way people think.
Doesn't this provide
especially
a
them.
Problem down the line? I mean, you can only beat your own time so long.
Okay, but as I said, we're not really talking about a... About this is just an analogy to break open quickly the idea that having big payments, you know, and no payments or that kind of dynamic has any sense to it at all. It doesn't. Okay, so now let's think in terms of rewarding work. So rewarding property, does that have any moral credibility with anybody?
No.
No. Obviously, it has no moral credibility. I mean, it is right. So is there any incentive credibility? What's your incentive if we're rewarding property?
Get more property.
Steal property from someplace or something like that. I mean, in other words, or be born to some other parents, which of course is not an option. Therefore, there's no incentive impact of rewarding property. What about bargaining power? Well, there is an incentive, get a bigger club, but presumably we don't believe in that. So we'll dump those two and we'll focus on what matters, which is product. Right. Suppose we reward product output. So you get more if what remember think of it in terms of pie as the total product. The bigger your product, your contribution is to the pie, the more you get back. Does that have an incentive to it?
Yeah, not really.
First of all, do we think it? Who said not really?
Me.
Why not?
Because if you're able to produce more and you reward a larger output, that still won't encourage you to do it specifically.
Sure, well. No, you're rewarding your output.
Oh.
No, we're rewarding, each person gets back what they put in.
Okay.
So if I put more in, I get more back. It's the most straightforward incentive award that you can imagine, right? Is there a moral component here? What's the ethical component of this thing? Well, suppose we're going out to cut sugar cane, okay? So the two of you are going out to cut sugar cane. And you go out for 6 hours and you cut the cane. And let's just say that you're a whole lot stronger, or let's just say that you're a whole lot stronger, right? And you have faster motion and everything else. So you come back after the 6 hours and you have this stack and you have this stack. So that means your income is this and your income is this. Of course, you can have it, you don't have to have it all sugar cane, you can have it in other things, but you get more. Now, why is your stack bigger? Well, it's because you have. You know, you were born bigger with bigger arms and faster movements and stuff. Is there a moral issue here?
That's not fair.
It's not ethical, or at least we don't believe it's ethical. We don't believe you should, by virtue of having been lucky in the genetic lottery, in other words, big muscles, you should then be on top of that rewarded. Okay? Does everybody agree with that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's see if everybody really does agree with that. So now we have Mozart, right? And we have Salieri, and they're two composers, right? And Salieri over here stays up all night sweating his beads off and comes up with a nice little ditty. Mozart spends 14 minutes and comes up with something that's going to last for the next 2,000 years and, you know, enrich the lives of many people, huh?
And parties all night.
Yeah, and parties all night. And is going to enrich the lives of a lot of people. And now it comes time to pay them. If we pay by output, what's the payment?
Mozart gets,
you know, Rhode Island, and Salieri gets dinner. And what do we do if it's by effort and sacrifice?
They don't get from the amount of time they put in, so.
And how hard they worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Salieri is going to get a lot more, unless Mozart was working a lot overnight and produced a whole lot of good stuff, right? Is this right? First morals.
Yes.
First morals. And all those who think yes?
This is the Mozart. Do we think Mozart and Salieri is right?
Huh?
Mozart and Salieri is right, not the Cain example.
Yeah, we're talking about Mozart. So yeah, well, some people will think it's the exact same example. Yeah, some people won't. Right. So let's take the. All right. Let's do the sugar cane one first. How many think the stronger person should get the more income for the sugar cane?
I guess I
do. Okay. And how many people think they should get based on effort and sacrifice, and therefore, let's say the same because they both put out the same. Okay. Now let's go over to Mozart and Salieri.
Oh, could I ask a question?
Yeah.
For you?
Yeah.
When we say effort and sacrifice, are we assuming that if one person pumps iron in the off time, that that counts in the effort and sacrifice? If I pump iron and get my muscles real strong, now I can cut more.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a good question. Yeah. We're going to come to it soon, yes. We are. If that was effort and sacrifice instead of game playing, yes.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
All right. We're going to come to that very, very soon.
You're going to have a hell of a time measuring.
Forget about that. Don't get stymied by worries about what comes next when you're trying to build a vision. Right? Until you're ready to do it, don't let it stop you. Or else you're getting stopped so early on that you never say what you really want. Okay, if we can't do it, we're screwed. We'll go back a step. Right? But if we can do it, then we can. All right, so, how was I? Oh, so Mozart and Salieri. How many think that, yeah?
I have a question. You seem to assume that someone like Mozart, whether it's Mozart or I...
Doesn't work hard?
Doesn't have effort or sacrifice.
Mozart didn't. But, But it doesn't matter whether he did or didn't. For the discussion, he didn't. For the discussion, he didn't. In other words, it's hypothetical. Okay. So it doesn't matter whether he did or he didn't. I mean, you know, he worked a lot less hard than Salieri, I think. But in any case, it doesn't matter, right? Suppose they sweated all night. Suppose they both sweated equally all night, right? They worked their asses off, and he came up with a ditty, and he came up with whatever, right? So it's still, he gets this gigantic pile, and he gets this pile. Or they both get the same because they both sweated the same amount. I mean, they both did the same effort. So which is it? All right, so how many people think they should both get the same? Hands up. And how many people think Mozart should get more? Hands up. And the rest of you are totally befuddled. What do you mean a difference?
What if there's a difference in the impact of what they're producing?
There is a difference. I mean, there's clearly a difference. Salieri's thing is
a
little ditty and Mozart's...
Between the two examples.
Well, if there's a difference between the two examples, that's what people are saying. They think there is a difference between the two examples.
No, I mean either one I'm not going to raise my hand for because they just are, they're actually, sugarcane and music are different things.
No, they're not. I don't think. All right, so I'm going to argue that they're not different things. I'm going to argue that thinking they're different things is what somebody who wants to be an artist says. Right, because they want to elevate what they do above what anybody else does. But there's no difference. Right? Why is the difference? In other words, let's just deal with the whole thing for a second.
Okay.
Either we think, and somebody may, that we should reward output. If we think we should reward output, we don't decide we should only reward my kind of output or the kind of output I would like to do. But then we're rewarding output. It's a principle. Right? Or we shouldn't reward output. We should reward effort and sacrifice. How much should Michael Jordan earn when he was in basketball, if we rewarded output? Was he underpaid or overpaid?
Underpaid.
All those who think overpaid, all those who think underpaid, right? He was way underpaid, right? If we were rewarding output. He certainly got a lot, but his bargaining power didn't keep up with his value, right? We know that because when Michael Jordan left, stocks in the businesses that were associated with Michael Jordan dropped $500 million, because he was no. I mean, it was just mind-boggling. Or how much should Einstein's family have? But the moral. There's two different questions here. There's a moral question and there's an incentive question, right? So the moral question, I'm going to argue, and if one doesn't accept it, then one isn't in favor of the kind of thing that I'm putting forward. I'm going to argue, you don't morally reward Mozart more on top of his having been lucky enough to have this genetic talent. What possible moral reason, moral, ethical reason, is there to say that on top of having been born with this talent, right, we're now going to bury you in money, too? You were lucky in the genetic lottery, and because you were lucky in the genetic lottery, you're entitled to more than other people.
Well, there's a huge debate about whether or not it's actually genetic, though. I don't know if we can
see. He was writing
here.
Things when
well,
he was
but
three
wait
years
a minute.
Old.
Wait
he
a minute.
Was,
a lot of leftists want to say the following. There is no genetic difference between people. Now, all I can do is say, are some people physically bigger than others? Are some people physically... If you think there's no genetic difference between people, people sort of feel that because they want equity, they want equality. The problem is, underneath they think it's better and worse. It's more deserving, it's less deserving. I don't have any... If there was... Of course there's genetic difference.
I don't want to...
In other words, unless somebody really feels this strongly, we shouldn't spend time... Of course there's genetic differences between people. You know, you can train from now until... You know, if we could give him rejuvenation drugs that would keep him alive for the next 2,000 years, and he is not going to be Magic Johnson. He's not going to happen. Will not happen, right? And somebody else will not be Mozart, and somebody else will not be Einstein. There are... Can you train? Yes. And we're going to see in a minute what training does to this. But we're not talking about it yet. Okay. So just like somebody is born and they can be a linebacker on the... San Diego, whatever the fuck, right, and earn a whole lot of money, and somebody else, if they happen to go out on the field in that position, you'd have to take them up with a splatter, right, because they'd be, right? That's due to their makeup. Now you have to train on top of it. But let's go back. Yeah.
Well, just a quick question. So would there be competition for spots like, musician or,
Don't jump to the end before you get the beginning. It's fine, but and you want to do it, fine, right? But you'll never be able to deal, at least that's my view, you'll just get bogged down too quick, right? Imagine you're creating a math theory, right? And you start asking questions about the end of it when you're doing the building blocks. It's a mistake. You might have it in the back of your mind trying to guide you. But what we have in the back of our minds trying to guide us is values, which you all accepted yesterday and now you're about to reject. Right? So that shows us how far we're getting. Right? Right? We haven't really thought them through yet, apparently, even though I was trying to get you to do it. So, rewarding effort and sacrifice or rewarding output. Back to the case. My contention is very simple. There is no moral argument. Forget incentive argument. There is no moral argument to reward Mozart over Salieri if they're doing equal effort and sacrifice. Einstein over somebody else if they're doing equal effort and sacrifice. Michael Jordan over somebody else if they're doing equal effort and sacrifice. Whatever it is. The large cane cutter over the small if they're doing equal effort and sacrifice.
What if they're
Suppose the two cane cutters go out, right? And this time you have a better thing. You have a worse thing. Tool, right?
Yeah.
You work the same amount of time, same effort, same sacrifice. Your pile now is bigger because you have a better tool. Should we reward you more? Why not? Morally.
It's nothing to do with him. It's a tool.
It's the tool. Well, neither is genetic endowment anything to do with you. Right? There's no moral reason to do it. Now, somebody wants to say, well, it isn't all genetic endowment. It's some other things, too. Well, what other things? If the other things involve effort and sacrifice, we should reward them. Okay? But not if they don't. So let's do another example. Just a surgeon, coal miner. Okay? And now we're going to introduce in a minute the incentive effect too. Morally, should we reward here's a person who spends an 8-hour day doing surgery, repairing people's hearts and whatever, and people walk away alive. And here's a person who spends an 8-hour day banging on the wall of the tunnel or whatever it is, knocking off coal. I don't know what exactly they do, but something like that, right? Breathing in the stuff and getting black lung disease and being exhausted and all the rest of it. So how do we reward them? If we reward them for effort and sacrifice, what's their relative pay?
Coal miner earns a lot more.
Coal miner earns more. If we reward them for output, what's their relative pay? The surgeon earns more. There's no point in making believe it's not the case that five live people who would have been dead over the course of the day isn't more valuable than a box of coal. It is, right? So the surgeon would earn more. Now, which is the morally right thing to do?
Reward the coal miner.
I don't understand how it's morally right to pay anybody any more than anybody else.
If you work longer and harder?
I don't care. I don't even understand, like.
Okay, well then you're in a different place. All right, so let's just wait on that, okay?
we'll
come back to that in a minute, why you would reward more if you do more effort. But certainly you're not going to reward the surgeon more, is what you're saying. But is anybody want to reward the surgeon more? Don't be embarrassed if you want to. It's okay. Get out of here. No, it's okay. Does anybody want to reward the surgeon more?
If the surgeon had more effort and sacrifice in the training or something like that where they didn't get...
Which is the argument that's put forward, right? Okay, so now let's examine that argument. Has anybody ever encountered that argument and sort of bought it?
Oh,
yeah, and sort of bought it a little bit and sort of figured, well, maybe the surgeon does deserve. Okay, so let's actually, instead of, because the argument is thrown at us 132,000 times a day with absolute force and everything else, of course, after a while we accept it, right? So let's, well, a lot of people do. Or maybe it seems convincing, but I'm not sure how. It's, you're deciding on, let's say we've just finished college, okay? And we're deciding on what to do with our lives. So how long does surgery take? 6 years?
Eight
years? I don't care. All right, 8 years. So it's the end of college, and here's our choice. Off to surgery school for 8 years, or off to the mines for 8 years. And then after that, let's say another 40 years of surgery or mines, right? Now, the argument is that this surgery is so onerous, the effort and sacrifice of going to school, the effort and sacrifice of going to school for those 8 years is so onerous that not only do we get paid more for a while, but for 40 years we get paid 10 times what the coal miner is getting paid to make up for the... Now let's ask whether it's onerous or not. Just let's start there. Which would you rather spend your time doing for the next 8 years? Suppose you had to spend your time in the coal mine for the 40 years after that, even if you went to medical school. Which do you want to do for the next 8 years right after college? The medical school or the coal mine? How much do we have to pay you to get you to go to the coal mine? If you want to see incentive effects, you have to ask the following question. Let's say coal miners earn $60,000 a year in our society. So they go straight in, they earn $60,000 a year for 40 years. The doctor goes in, earns peanuts for 8 years, right, and then earns $250,000 a year. Okay, so how much do we have to pay the coal miner to be willing to go to the medical school and to become the surgeon? How much more than $60,000?
Nothing. No.
Huh? Nothing. Well, this is odd. Society is going to fall apart if we don't use these things because of the incentive effect, but somehow when you look closely, what actually is the coal miner willing to do? Probably work for less than $60,000 over here. Okay, now we got the doctor earning $250,000. How much do you have to pay him to go over here to the coal mines? Remember, ostensibly, he needs the whole $250,000 to be over here. Do you got to pay him more to stay away from the coal mines?
Definitely, yeah.
Oh, you do? To stay away from the coal mines? Right. So how low do I have to drop his salary before he's going to say, oh, no, I've had enough, I'm going over to the coal mines?
Less than 69.
How low?
Probably half or
15.
Down to when he's going to die, right? And then he's going to switch over to the coal mine. It just doesn't have to be that to make the point, but that's about right. So it's nonsense, right? It's total, utter, complete gibberish, right? Enforced only by repetition. It has nothing to do with reality. There is no incentive argument going on here for this particular case. With this particular thing. So we have a moral issue and an incentive issue, and we have to think about each and look at each to figure out what the issue is. Incentives are something that's supposed to spur you, to provide you a reason to do something. There is no incentive effect that will ever be invented that can cause you to change your genes, right? There is no incentive effect on talent. There is no incentive effect, innate talent. There is no incentive effect on biological makeup. There is no incentive effect on anything like that. There can be incentive effect on training, on schooling, but of course, if training and schooling is desirable, you don't need a big incentive to go do it, right? There can be an incentive effect on how hard you work, absolutely, and in fact, that's precisely what I'm saying we should pay for, effort, right? So, you see the moral and you see the... Now, you have to deal with this in yourself, whether or not you think... Now, as far as art as compared to anything else, I fail to see the difference, but it's going to come up again in 2 minutes, so let's leave it for a second. Now, should we pay anybody anything different than anybody else? Well, I think what the assumption in your back of your head is that everybody will do their best, but what if people won't? What if I want to work fewer hours? Right? What if I want to work less hard? Should I just get as much as everybody else anyway for working a full amount?
Well, I mean, what if the system were set up so that we could maximize people's ability to make wise career choices?
Fine, but it's...
Because, really, I don't think that... I mean, for instance, I know a lot of people that have chosen very difficult lives because they have the genetic makeup or the experiences that tell them that they want to do something that they realize isn't going to reward them financially. I mean, I don't think you really need to reward people financially for making a good career choice for themselves.
Right.
And I mean, and some people really do have a greater opportunity to realize what it is that they like to do.
So in reality, it turns out, in fact, that to get the genius to do the thing that they're genius at, you don't have to reward them because they're dying to do the thing that they're genius at. And that's historically what has generally happened. They die to try and do it because they can't get rewards. Everybody has in their head that they get rewarded, but it's usually quite the opposite. But that's right, but that's a different thing. If we're both working and I'm lazy about it, humans can be lazy about it, right?
They can be lazy about it when they don't want to do it.
Well, but,
I mean,
but why should they get paid for it?
Desire to do it. I mean,
well, then you shouldn't. But you should do something else. But should society reward you and let you go home and you know, play the flute in your dining room and still you're paid, even though you're perfectly capable? These are moral issues, right? These are issues. There is a moral issue and there's an incentive issue. There, I think there's a real incentive issue. So in other words, I think pain, effort, and sacrifice really does. There is a real incentive there. You have an incentive to exert.
Well, I think...
Let's go on to Balanchard complexes and see if you hold this as we get through it, okay? And then we'll come back to it once we have a bigger picture. All right, so we see the training. If training involves effort and sacrifice, it's work. Right? So we remunerate it in accord with the effort and sacrifice that's involved for it, not in accord with what the doctor says the effort and sacrifice is in order to be able to be rich all their life. Right? Not that, but in accord with what it really is. Okay, so the first part of our picture for a workplace is going to be that people are rewarded for effort and sacrifice. Obviously, it's going to have to be measured somehow, but let's wait a little bit to see whether or not we can do that. So what's the second part of our picture of the workplace? Well, the second part was balanced job structures, job complexes. So what's a balanced job complex?
Combination of the parts of the job that really empower you, allow you to enjoy doing your job, plus the scut work, the shitty jobs. Whatever.
So some mix of stuff at various levels. Could be more, you know, a bunch here, a bunch here, it could be spread out, that on average has comparable, as much as we can equilibrate, comparable empowerment effects and quality of life effects as other people, right? Okay, so let's say we do that, and we're thinking about an economy that has only one workplace, this is the whole economy, we do it in this workplace, right? So we've all got a balanced job complex. And suppose we're remunerating for effort and sacrifice, right? Then most often, what's going to determine whether you get more or less income? Think about it a second. Most often, what's going to determine whether you get more or less income?
Whether you do shitty jobs or not.
One thing is going to be whether you're slacking off or working real hard, but what do we expect about that? Basically, people are going to put out normally. So if basically people put out normally, then what would be the differentiating factor?
Credentials.
The what?
Credentials.
Credentials, no, not in our good economy. Credentials doesn't have anything to do with anything. Because what's a credential? I mean, that's not effort and sacrifice. I graduated from such and such, so what? Right? It's effort and sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So the point is what's going to manifest effort and sacrifice if we have balanced job complexes? See, we don't any longer have a coal miner and a surgeon. Why not? The person who's doing surgery is doing what? Some other stuff. Whatever other stuff they're doing, it's a balanced job complex. And the person who's chipping some coal is doing what? some other stuff that makes it a balanced job complex. So we no longer have this differential in terms of if we just normally work the workday, one is sacrificing and the other is being fulfilled. We don't have that anymore. So what do we have that would differentiate how much two people were doing?
How hard they work.
How hard they work and how long they work. Right? How long they work. So basically that's what we expect to yield income if we have balanced job complexes. What's the argument against balanced job complexes? What's the argument for it morally? The argument for it morally is what?
Empowerment.
Yeah, well, why should some people have more of something good and other people have less of something good? You know, why should we distribute it in such a way that some people have all the goodies and some people have all the baddies, right? There's no moral argument on behalf of that. The argument on behalf of that is going to be what?
Efficiency.
And what's the argument?
People aren't smart enough to do the higher-end jobs or whatever.
So there's two versions of the argument. One is going to be that there's a set of people who, if they do the higher tasks, right, will make a mess of them. The other reverse version of that is that there's a set of people who can do the higher task, if you don't want to be quite so, right, who can do the higher task so well that society benefits a great deal from them spending all their time doing the higher task. First of all, is there any truth to it? Now, don't jump to what you might think my answer is.
Actually, I don't think so.
You don't think there's any truth to it?
No, I don't think so, because I think that when people have a balanced life, when they you know, take care of children and wash dishes and do things in addition to open heart surgery, then that person would be a much more well-balanced person. I mean, I'm sure you've met attorneys, for example, that just spend all day reading books and doing things, and they lead horrible little lives.
Well, wait, I didn't say whether they would be better off, and that's for them to judge in any case. I said whether we'd be better off. So suppose you literally do have a surgeon. You know, you got a surgeon. He's the only person in the world who can cure disease X. If he's doing surgery, there are a few people dying of disease X. When he's not doing surgery, people are dying of disease X. We'd lose something, right? Society would lose something by virtue of, it's a peculiar example, but by virtue of the fact that this person could do disease X surgery better than anybody else, right, even with training, we lose something. Likewise, we lose something if Mozart... Right. If Mozart is capable of composing all day long, and instead of composing all day long, he has to sweep up sometimes and do this and do that, and he's not composing during that time, would we lose? We lost some Mozart. No point denying that it's a loss. That's a loss, right? We would have lost some Mozart, and that would be a loss. Okay, but now, so far, there's a point being made by the other side who's saying maybe there's something to lose. You're saying there's something to gain, right, for the person. I don't think we should judge for that person so much. But what about for society? There's something to gain. What are we trying to gain with this approach of balanced job complexes? We're trying to gain...
equity.
Yeah, we're trying to gain the values that we mentioned. We're trying to gain justice. We're trying to gain no classes. So clearly there's something big for society to gain. So the other side has to argue we're losing so much in output. Remember, this is what I said they were going to have to argue. They have to argue that we're losing so much in output that gaining equity and justice and no classes doesn't make up for it. Well, is that the case?
No.
Is that the case? In other words, tell me a case why, if all the people who have a relative monopoly on the good, empowering, creative work had to do their fair share of shit work, how much would the production that we get out of all the people's labors go down? I mean, how much would we lose? Or would we lose? Because,
well, because they would still, the jobs would still be getting done.
Who would be doing them?
These brilliant folks, I guess. Like everybody would be doing them.
No, everybody would be doing them in the change, yeah. Right? More people would be doing them, right? Mm-hmm. Now, is it really the case that what we have here is Salieri instead of Mozart? Mm-hmm. All across the board. What do we have instead?
We have the Mozarts from the rich families.
On the one hand, beforehand, we only had the Mozarts who got to be Mozart. Mm-hmm. What about all the Mozarts who we never discovered? Mm-hmm. So in the first place, right, we're not even going to lose the geniuses. We're going to see, the mindset, the underlying assumption, the underlying unwritten statement of the whole premise, right, is that it really is the case that those who are the top are the creative people. right? That's really what's lurking under the discussion. And everybody else is a buffoon. And they're a buffoon, or they're uncreative at any rate. They're incapable of doing creative, engaging, you know, productive work. Why? Because they're incapable of it. Not because social structures prevent it. You've got to be grossly sexist. You've got to be grossly racist, and you've got to be grossly classist not to see, I hope I don't offend anybody, but this is the reality, not to see that if you elevate everybody to whatever their potential is, right, but you make people do balanced job complexes, you are not reducing the total creative, you know, productive capacity of the society. You are taking some of some people's creative capacity and not using it while they're sweeping, but you are liberating the creative productive capacity of the other 80%, which has been wiped out previously. So even on grounds of productivity, right, you're not losing, you're gaining a ton. Now, if you were losing, I'd still be for it, because that's not the sole criteria of value, which is the kind of thing I think that's... But you're not losing. There's no point in giving in on this argument. You're not losing. The assumptions that make it a loss are wrong. Yes?
I don't see why a Mozart or an Einstein sweeping floors is necessarily helping someone who's in the coal mine become a Mozart, because
it's not
in
by
your
itself.
Society, the coal miner will have the kind of education, the kind of
right.
this and that and the other, that will permit those geniuses who happen to be coal miners to become a Mozart.
No,
or an Einstein.
But you can't have it both ways. No, you want to have it both ways. You want to say, let's let the people who have really big talents do only the big talented thing. But the minute you start to do that, you now have to have unbalanced job complexes. You have to have remuneration of a different kind. And you can't simultaneously say, we'll find all that talent. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. You can't do it. You can't have your cake and eat it too. But I don't like it morally or ethically or in incentives in addition. I mean, I can argue against it just on the fact that it's not possible. But it's morally wrong, right? There is no reason why Einstein should send... Well, first of all, again, the reality. What's the reality for the surgeon? How does the surgeon spend the day?
Doing a lot of shit work.
Well, doing a lot of golf.
I'm talking about the job itself of being a surgeon,
well,
not just sweetness and niceness.
But it's very empowering, right? It's very empowering. If it's not, then it gets rewarded more. See, we don't have to argue about that kind of thing.
I'm not talking about going to play golf, but I'm talking about being...
But we don't have to argue about it. We don't have to agree. If you want to say that the job of the surgeon is onerous and is unfulfilling, fine. History will tell us. I think that's nonsense. But if it is, of course they work hard. But they don't work 40 times as hard as an assembly worker.
Well, the assembly worker ought to be able to play golf too. So I mean,
they don't work 40 times as hard as the assembly worker. The assembly worker works harder, sacrifices more, gets off work in pain, right, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if that's not true, then, okay, the surgeon will learn a little more. But I think for most people who have any experience of working on an assembly line versus working in a creative job, it is clearly the case that working on an assembly line and being stultified and sacrificing your entire being and being reduced as a human being is much, much worse than being in a job which, you know, tells you you're wonderful, empowers you, gives you some control, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we're going to balance them, right?
Right.
So it's not going to be that the person who does some surgery in the new economy is going to be doing some other stuff. So you might want to still call that person a surgeon because that's the sort of principal thing that they identify themselves as. But they're going to have a balanced job complex in the new system. And the person who's doing some coal mining is going to be doing other stuff. And the same for everybody.
How do they learn how to do all these things?
Well, okay, how do they learn to do all these things? The creative stuff the same way as now, except in schools that are infinitely better because they don't have to be designed to keep people out. But the way they learn is by learning.
No, but if the surgeon is spending 8 years learning how to be a surgeon, she is not spending...
8 years learning how to sweep?
Right, or
yeah,
learning how to...
Well, but you don't have to...
No, but learning gradations of jobs, I mean, it's not just the...
But it's not... Think of a hospital, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Imagine you started to institute this in a hospital, mm-hmm. right? Well, so the surgeon is going to, you know, clean some beds. This thing is going to take. You don't have to, right? The more extreme one part is, the more to balance it off.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the implication for schooling?
Everyone's got to have the high level of training. If like go in the direction of interest, if you're interested in being a surgeon, or whatever. You study surgery, and then you can...
But what else is necessary? It's necessary that everybody, right,
yeah,
have the mindset and the inclinations to be creative, to produce, to make decisions, et cetera, et cetera. So what they call a, what do they call it, a liberal arts education or something, you know, with that, all that rhetoric, mm-hmm, that becomes real, right? The school system is in fact succeeding when it is making you into the best you can be, rather than stamping you down. And it's absolutely essential. The economy requires, instead of the economy requiring the opposite or being neutral, it literally requires a good school system. Mm-hmm. Let's go. All right, let's do a little and then move on. Yeah.
I'm not convinced that balanced job complex is actually that balanced, because, like, say in an individual workplace, like a hospital,
good,
but then you got a coal mine.
Right.
What are the different types of jobs?
So what do you do as a thinker now? You've been rolling along with your model, right? You were ecstatic last night, but this morning you get up and some wise ass says to you, "But wait a minute, you know, I'm going to go work in the firm that has the higher average."
Yeah, exactly.
And in fact, what I'm going to do is, because, see what happens, what I'm going to do, because I'm shooting to be the coordinator, right, is I'm going to try and get lots of get a certain number of firms that now monopolize the quality stuff. So in those firms, the average is real high. Is everybody getting what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And in the other firms, it's real low. Yeah. Right? And now, we aren't in direct proximity, but once again, we've got the coordinator class over here. So what do we have to do?
Balance out the firms.
What do we have to do?
I'm not sure.
Well, there's only one thing possible.
You got to balance it out. So does that mean that the people who work in the hospital also have to work in the coal mine?
No, not in the coal mine, but it does mean you have to balance across. See, this is the thing. If you start... And every time something comes along, every time something comes along which somebody else could turn into silliness, you stop, you're in trouble, right? Because you can turn almost anything into silliness. It means we've got to balance across workplaces. Now we ask, how do we do that, right? And somebody who's going to try and poke holes is going to say, oh, you're saying everybody has to do everything. We didn't say everybody has to do everything. You're saying everybody has to be everywhere. We didn't say anything like that. We just said you have to balance. So, yeah, if you work in a coal mine, how many hours a week? But let's say a think tank, right? For that matter, suppose there are workplaces that are producing music, right? If you spend a lot of your time, some of your time working in there, and there isn't that many cleanup tasks, and there isn't that many onerous tasks at all, so the average is really high, right? Then you have to spend some time out doing something else.
Probably spend less time in the think tank than you would in the other.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
Depends what the other is. Depends what the other is. But the point is, we're balancing.
Yeah.
And the argument is, we're doing it because it's ethically right, just on the face of it. Because it's the only way to get what? We said we wanted solidarity, self-management, equity, and diversity. Mm-hmm. If you didn't mean that, you should have stopped me back then. But we said we wanted that. So if we want that, this gets it. And everything else, any other kind of division of labor, is immediately doing less well at those values. We saw why, right? So we needed to get those values. So that's another reason why we're doing it. Now, oddly enough, I think we're also doing it for production, right? I think we get more output per humanity, right? We just get less from some people, right? So... Now, yeah?
I'll comment on the balanced job complex. It would also have to do with balanced access to education. Okay, coal miner.
It requires that.
Okay, well, that's because that's what you'd make it be. You know, you wouldn't have any elitist education because your old man owns Exxon, you go to Harvard. You wouldn't have that.
Well, what if you did have it? What would happen?
You wouldn't have it.
But let's say you did. Well, so you have balanced job complexes and you have our educational system.
Well,
what happens?
One
falls apart.
You're very difficult to do what you're talking about.
Yeah, but if you did have it, what happens is that the graduates from the education system don't fit the economy. Right? Some people expect to be bossing everybody around. Some people have been acclimated to taking orders. Some people have this monopoly on all this information and knowledge. Other people have relatively nothing. They come over here, they don't fit. So it's out of whack. Remember I said that was my technical term for this? It's out of whack. So it's out of whack, so something has to give, and something has to change. And you're right. Since we favor this, we say this should change. And the way this should change is to become an egalitarian education.
All right, so now we got the balance complex. That's
yep.
What we had before.
Yeah.
Now we have a surgeon that has to work in a coal mine.
No.
Well, I just want to use this as an illustration.
Okay? Has to do onerous work to offset.
Yeah, but I'm just using your illustration once again.
Okay.
Probably way off the wall.
Okay.
And the coal miner, he has to work in a hospital. Obviously, he can't do neurosurgery right off, but all of a sudden he discovers that he has a phenomenal medical aptitude, okay? And as a result, he starts to study, okay? And work hard and put a lot of effort and sacrifice in.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you find out that he's a hell of a lot better neurosurgeon than the guy in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And conversely, the guy who goes to the coal mine really hates the hospital. His folks forced him into medicine in the first place. And he gets over there and he says, hey, this isn't so bad. And he's a real creative guy, okay? We can create a whole lot better thing here. I'm into medicine, okay? Where nobody gets any black lung disease anymore,
okay?
And he starts putting his creativity in the other fields,
right. Okay?
All of a sudden, everything's changing in both fields.
Well, that's nice, and it could happen.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I'm saying, you know, which only...
But it's,
that's what you're saying.
It's
going to bring everything up.
Yeah, but it isn't the case that, you know, if you're in the hospital, you got to work in the coal mine to lay it off. You just have to balance it off. All right, as long as we're clear about that. I mean, that was just an artifact of the example. Right. It's certainly possible. And it's certainly possible that, you know, all those things could happen. Yeah.
Mike, would you say that it's very likely that in a participatory economy, I mean, I know the allocation system deals with this,
right. But
it's just very likely that jobs like coal mining themselves would not be a permanent occupation.
Sure.
If we deemed that they were necessary to do, they would be part of, like, just maybe somebody worked there 2 hours a week and nobody worked there.
I don't know how long people would work. It would be in a balanced job complex. But what do we know is going to be the inclination of investment? Right, we're going to see later. What did we say was the driving, motivating force of investment under capitalism?
Profit.
In other words, if the firm is going to invest, what's the motivation behind it?
Profit
and
market share.
And reproducing the conditions of taking the profit. Remember? So the owner is investing. They're not just investing in trying to increase output and therefore increase surplus if somebody else takes the surplus. So they're trying to reproduce the hierarchical social relations. That's very important. It's a myth that they're trying to maximize output or even surplus. They're trying to do both, right? So if a particular technology would induce solidarity and make the workers uppity but increase output, you don't choose it. Right? Because even though you get the more output and you get more surplus in the short run, in the longer run, the workers take it all away from you because they're better organized. Right? So it isn't true that you're... Is that clear? Now, what's the motivation likely to be in a balanced job complex workplace? We have to see about allocation. But just on the face of it, what's the motivation likely to be?
Equitable fulfillment.
Let's ask the question this way. How do you get ahead? If we have remuneration for effort and sacrifice and balanced job complexes, how do you make your life better?
Work hard.
If we're thinking in terms of better being more income in order to have more stuff, that's good stuff. Don't, you know, disparage stuff. Stuff can be good stuff. Work harder, right? So one way is to work harder. What's the other way?
Take crappier jobs.
Huh?
Take
a crappier job if it's available,
cut
right?
Hours.
Huh? Cut your hours, a different kind of improving your circumstances if you prefer leisure over labor. Reduce your hours. But there's another way. Think in terms of the pie. If I work harder, what am I doing? I'm increasing my slice in a morally warranted way because I've worked more effort. If I work less hours, I'm reducing my slice a little bit, but I'm gaining the hours, and I value the hours more, so I make that choice. Right? If I work at the shittier job, I'm increasing my effort. My slice is going up a little bit. Okay, what is there any other way we can increase?
Work the job that empowers you, the one that satisfies the quality of life.
But what else? What?
Pie bigger.
You can make the pie bigger. But now how the hell do you make the pie bigger?
By working harder.
Well, one way is by saying that everybody works harder. Right? In other words, the work week gets longer or something like that. Everybody would do that if they wanted to have more pie as compared to work less. Right? But let's go over to the balanced job complex for a minute. How do you increase the quality of your workday?
To increase it so that you enjoy it more, you probably have easier jobs.
Okay, but well, no, I'm saying, let's say that the job complexes are balanced. There are no easier jobs. You know, they're balanced. You're obviously choosing one that suits you. Okay, but once you've chosen one that suits you, how does your workday get any better?
More pleasant environment.
Well, but then you can't have a more pleasant environment unless what?
You have an ease consciousness, an ease conscious.
Well, but if I have a better, if I have a better job,
someone has a worse job.
Or, what's the alternative?
Everyone
has a better job. Why did everyone get a better job?
Innovation.
Because we did something that did what? It improved the average job complex. For me to get ahead, the pie has to get bigger. Everybody has to get ahead. The average job complex has to get better. Everybody gets ahead. Or I have to do something that warrants it, like putting in more effort and sacrifice, which doesn't hurt anybody else. Exploitation is gone. Solidarity is beginning to rear its head, right? Because we have shared interests. It isn't the case that it's a zero-sum game anymore, that some people get ahead and other people go backward. That's not an option. You can't have a change like that. You can't even try and do it. We'll see more when we do the allocation. Okay, so now...
can I argue?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
If the only way you can get I can see that working harder, obviously. Making everybody's life better would seem so daunting to me that you'd wonder if you could even accomplish it, and so you would just work harder for yourself, and
Let's ask. Suppose we're a workplace. Mm-hmm. Let me just check something for a second. Suppose we're a workplace, and we're thinking about a innovation in our workplace. So let's suppose we're a publishing company, and we're thinking about an innovation in the way we typeset books. And across town, there's a, just to stick to the example, there's the coal mine, and somebody has come up with the innovation to change the way the coal mining is done, which would reduce the incidence of any kind of black lung or anything like that, and would make work there better. Okay. So there are these two innovations. In our system, our current system, under capitalism, we're sitting around and discussing our innovation. We know about that other innovation. Which innovation do we want to have happen?
I want to make more money.
Well, but which innovation do we want? Do we give a shit about the innovation over in the coal mine? No, we don't care about it at all, right? We want to have the innovation in our workplace, regardless of what the impact is, if it makes our situation better, right? In market socialism, same thing. Right, but what about in participatory economics? Think about it for a second. Which innovation do we want to have happen?
Whichever one makes the average job complex higher.
Makes the bigger pie.
And so what's our interest?
For everyone.
The black lung.
We have to pay attention to whose well-being?
Everybody.
And can we get ahead if we don't do that? And now solidarity is rearing its head rather strongly.
Really?
Right? There's something about the structure of the thing which says that you actually have more interest in the innovation over in the coal mine than you have in the innovation in your own workplace. If the coal mine innovation, its character, is such as to have more effect on the average job complex throughout the economy. That's pretty interesting. We actually didn't build that into the model. We discovered it after we had the model. You know, one of those moments. Whoops! You know. But that's a nice, that's a pretty nice quality there, right?
Why
does everybody get it? I mean,
no, I don't have an incentive for...
You gotta say when you don't get, what?
It's like a built-in incentive for technological innovation.
Of a certain kind, yeah.
Okay.
But here's the idea again. Here's the publishing house. So somebody comes along and says, you know, it would be really good if we did an innovation. We move from, the old style typesetter to the desktop publishing programs. Costs some money. It's an innovation, right? So we're advocating for that innovation. We haven't done allocation yet, but just take it for, we're advocating for that innovation. Across town in the coal mine, somebody says, your surgeon says, if we were to do this, it would reduce black lung and it would improve the quality of our workday. So they're advocating for that innovation, right? So the question becomes, are we just at each other's throats competing for resources to do innovations? With us advocating ours because it's going to help us, and them advocating them because it's going to help them, and nobody caring about anybody but themselves, that's what happens now, right? But with a balanced job complex, that goes away. Because if we improve our workplace, what happens to us? Suppose we're over there in the coal mine and we improve the coal mine a whole lot. What happens to the coal miner's balanced job complex?
It goes up.
salary. It's a more desirable job.
It becomes somewhat better, but does it become better the whole amount of the improvement of the coal mine?
No, you have to do something else to make up for the.
Yeah, the, if you were doing 20% of your time the coal mining, right? And it was balanced into your job complex as this horrendous thing. And now along comes this innovation that makes the coal mining part of your balanced job complex way less horrendous or even desirable, right? Now to have a balanced job complex, you got to change your workload a little bit.
Would there ever be a possibility again?
Is that clear?
Yeah.
So you don't get the full benefit of the gigantic innovation in the place where it happens. You get the same benefit as the whole society gets. Because you wind up with a balanced job complex, just like everybody else.
I mean, it only matters when the whole society's pie gets bigger.
Well, in this case, it's not the pie, it's the quality of the whole society's work life. Yeah, yeah.
Would there be an incentive not to do innovations because the coal miner realizes he's not going to get, it doesn't seem like it, because he'll still get a little better.
Yeah, yes, they'll get a little better. And this is a serious and difficult, you know, we're not going to be able to do anything. You could decide on incentive grounds, not moral grounds, I think. But you could decide on incentive grounds, you want to delay the spread a little bit to provide a little more incentive for the industry and the innovation and the thinking that goes into creating changes. So you might want to give a little bit extra benefit to the place that generates it. You could decide that. It wouldn't be a disaster, right? But you might not decide it. What do they say in capitalism, just by the way? How do the capitalist theorists talk about this? What do they say happens to innovations? They say markets spread them instantly. Right? So any innovation, any change in technique goes through the whole industry and throughout the whole economy instantly. Does that happen? Of course not. Well, what's the impediment to that happening?
Capital.
Among other things. Huh?
Capital.
Yeah. Barriers and everything else. But there's even another one.
Competition. You want
copyrights. It's even legally impossible. Right? And it has nothing to do with reality. So when I argue with somebody, they say, oh, it'll take for a long time and everything, and you just sort of feel like, what are you, you know, I wish you knew what you were talking about. So it would be an interesting discussion, because it's like they assume the rhetoric. No capitalist assumes the rhetoric. No capitalist is confused. But the neoclassical economists, they have this mathematical thing in their head, right? Instant markets and instant, you know, and it doesn't happen. We know it doesn't happen. Okay, but so that's what we're saying. So we're saying, you know, if you think of it as instantly, then everybody instantly benefits the same way from any innovation. If you think of it as taking some time, then the places where it initially happens is going to benefit a bit more. Because it takes a little time to percolate through to balanced job complexes. I'm not worried about that. Right? That just gives a little more incentive, as you say, for continually improving things. Right? Okay, so where are we? Anybody got anything that they're concerned about at this point?
Well, back to that same question, would that give you an incentive to hide that innovation?
So it's not obvious how you do that, since you had to request the stuff to make the innovation with, right? I mean, we're going to do allocation. But I should say something. If you assume that human beings are slugs, right, you don't want to assume human beings are saints, right? You don't want to create an economy. Here's a little joke. The physicist, the chemist, and the economist are on the island, and they've got one can, and they're hungry, right? So the physicist says, you know, take the can, take a rock, take a stick, hit the rock, hit the stick, hit the can, increase the volume, blow off the top, you know, or something. And the chemist says, well, rub the sticks together, make a fire, hold the can the right distance above the fire, hold the pot in the right place, the can blows up, the top goes off, the stuff comes into here, eat it. And the economist says, assume a can opener. And that's the difference between, you know, the physicist and the chemist and the economist. And we don't want to be doing that, right? So we don't want to be saying, like the anarchist says, you know, well, let's get rid of the state. We'll just assume that there's no pathological anything, there's nobody who kills, there's nobody who disagrees, there's nobody who gets drunk and goes on a rampage, there's no differential, you know, there's no strong, there's nothing. You know, just assume it all away, and then we have our glorious thing. The economist doesn't want to assume away the fact that people might be a little greedy at times, or people might be a little, you don't want to assume it away, right?
Yeah, but don't you?
But you do want to, you don't want to do the opposite, right? And build your whole system as if everybody is Jack the Ripper, right? You don't want to do that either. You want institutions which promote the good things that you believe in and do not work. You win it. See, nice guys finish last, Leo DeRocha or Garbage Rises, Michael Albert. What is that saying? That's saying the institutions are structured in such a way that the behavior that enhances your life is being a thug, right? So we want a situation in which we don't assume that everybody's going to be a saint. Instead, we build institutions which require social behavior. Not saint-like, but, you know, solidaritous, caring, human behavior. That's the way to get ahead. So you notice the way to get ahead in the economy is to think about increasing the size of the pie, or to contribute, you know, to work harder, which is fair enough, right? Or to improve the quality of work. So when we're having a debate, we're not trying to figure out how to get ourselves ahead. We're listening to the coal miners over there to see what, you know, how big that change is. We're not trying to, you know, trick them into thinking they have a smaller change than they have. Does anybody want to produce anything that somebody is going to be tricked into buying? Think about this for a minute. Is there any incentive to do that? I want to make my life better. I work in this place that produces whatever it produces. Do I want more people to buy it and buy it and buy it regardless of the impact on the people?
No, just because you end up in it, you make waste, which lowers efficiency, which shrinks the pie, right? So everyone,
that's part of the pie, just like, you know, if people are consuming it. But what is my income a function of?
For everyone.
Effort and sacrifice, but it's not a function of how many units my firm sells. I don't have anything to gain by tricking people into buying more of my thing with an advertisement which makes them think that it's going to, you know, make them younger or something when it's not true. I don't have any reason to try and trick anybody into... I don't want to spend my time producing... I mean, imagine you're in your family... A lot of this you can think of as in terms of just, what would I do with my friends? Forget it, you know? Imagine you're with your friends. Do you want to create a birthday present for somebody, you know, and work 4 months on it and trick them into taking it from you and then have them go home and weep because it doesn't do them any good? But you're happy. You know, in other words, that's, right? But if you're paid for doing that, and that's the only way you can be paid, fine. So, you see? So you don't want to publish books that nobody reads. You don't want to... Why would you want to do that? It's just waste. You're right. It's inefficient. Right? And if you trick them into getting it, it looks efficient, but it's inefficient. So there's no incentives in this system to do the things that have incentives in market systems. Right? Is there any buyer and seller? Well, we haven't done. Forget. I didn't ask that.
You had a question.
Whatever. Who? Go ahead.
Who? She tried to get in a couple times when you were in
the No, you actually finished an answer. I was going to say something, but you said it for me and said it much better. So.
And it was okay.
It was okay.
All right. Okay, what about efficiency? Well, let's look at we started to look a little bit at solidarity. We clearly, the whole thing is done for purposes of equity, right? Remuneration and whatever, and the balanced job complexes. For self-management, how does it enhance that? How does the balanced job complexes enhance self-management? Why do we need it for self-management?
Knows what everybody else should be doing.
Well, you know enough to be empowered enough to participate. Yeah. Remember, a key point about democracy is that it's not just that you have the formal right to have a say, it's that you're prepared to have a say. And so we said we have to have balanced job complexes so we don't have one set of people who are cleaning up and doing all this stuff, and then they come in and they have a vote, but they don't have any position, don't have any opinion, can't voice it, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So it was to get rid of the coordinator class, working class distinction. That was the whole motivation in the first place. So the reason why we have balanced job complexes is to enhance. You looking troubled?
Well, I'll ask afterwards. Go ahead. I was just trying to figure out where, like, disabled and handicapped people fit in this model.
Where do they fit?
Well, I don't know.
Well, where do they fit?
Well, they don't seem like that they would have, I don't know. I guess they'd be rewarded on the same standards of sacrifice and effort.
And? I could have made a mistake, so go ahead.
No, the thing was...
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, it's like I've just been working with the model of, you know, enabled people doing the work, but then there would be some people who wouldn't be, who for, you know...
And do we want to just have them starve to death and die?
That's, the thing was, I was thinking there's got to be some...
Well, then what do we do?
Well...
That's
give me a second. It's like everything's happening fast. I'm West Coast.
You from California? You from California?
No, Alaska. Worse.
Go.
No,
go ahead.
No, I don't know. It seems that there needs to be a mechanism, but I don't know what the mechanism is.
But sure you do. You do. What's the mechanism in this grotesque society? Even in this society.
Warehouses, but it's like...
No, warehouses, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean, it's just basically moving them out of the system and keeping them out of the way and giving them
Suppose tomorrow you get into an accident and you're bedridden for 6 months. What do we have for that?
Workers' comp.
We have workers' comp or insurance or something. But what's the logic? The logic is that, and I forgot this, that we could reward property, we could reward marginal product, we could reward bargaining power, we can reward need. And I don't want to forget that. We could reward effort and sacrifice. Right? That's the other thing that we could reward. Now, there's a lot of people who think we should just reward need. In other words, that's the way we should organize our society. What, in other words, what are we saying if we do that? Just go back to remuneration. Right? Suppose we say, we don't want to reward property for reasons we've dealt with. We don't want to reward power for reasons we've dealt with. We don't want to reward product, output, that's more subtle, but it's because we don't want to give people more just for having better tools. That's output, right? Luckily, being in a field that is more valuable, surgeon as compared to doing something else, right? And or genetic endowment, which they didn't have anything to do with, right? And certainly isn't morally. So we don't want to reward that either. But what about need? Why don't we just give everybody what they want?
There's no incentive to work hard.
So one explanation would be there's no incentive to work hard. But first of all, what's the nice thing about everybody gets what they want?
Everybody gets what they want.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about everybody gets what they want is that everybody gets what they freaking want. So it does have a nice attribute to it, obviously.
Well, I mean, it's not possible to give everybody what they want. It is possible to give everybody what they need, though.
Who decides that?
Yeah. Who decides what you need?
Well, I mean, we have basic physical needs that can very easily be quantified, I think.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, you know, you need, I'm not talking about giving people, like just a little box of food and stuff.
Well, but there you go. You're talking about some amount.
But everybody needs access to food, and I think everybody should have equal access to food and to decide how much food they need. They're not goldfish, they're not going to explode. You know? I think
okay. But if we said you see, here's the problem with it, there's two problems with it. One problem with you just reward need is that now we have no incentives to do anything. So there's no particular reason given the statement, why I should work at all. Because everything I need, I'm going to get. So now you say back.
Because I'm getting fed.
Well, partly.
I'd like to get fed in addition to working, but that's not why I work.
Partly it is. I bet.
Well, my shit job, that's why I work.
Yeah, okay, but shit jobs have to get done. That's what incentives are for. Incentives, you're right. You don't need incentives to get people to do what they want to do. You need incentives to get people to do what they don't want to do. And that's the shit jobs. Now, we have balanced job complexes, which means you can't work at any job, including the one you like to do, unless you do the shit work. Okay,
shit work is actually unnecessary anyway.
Well, and we're going to get rid of it. Why? Because we want to make the balanced job complex get better, and everybody has an interest in getting rid of it. Whoop-de-doo. So that's good. So, but now let's go back again for a minute. I think when people say we should reward need, and then you say, well, nobody will have any incentive to work. And then the person says, well, that's not what people are. People are good people. They're part of society. They want to contribute. They'll work the right amount. But then the question becomes, what's the right amount? How is anybody in a position to gauge how much they should work unless they can somehow correlate in some way what they're getting to what work is a responsible amount to contribute?
It goes back to your marathon analogy last time.
Well, among other things, you need, that's the incentive part. But even the responsible, even if we assume saints, and I don't want to do that, but even if we assume saints, if you just reward need and everybody gets what they want, how do you know what your responsibility is given the amount that you took? You have no indicator for that. You have no way of gauging what's responsible and what's not. So one person thinks it's responsible to work 24 hours a day, and I think it's responsible to work for 20 minutes a day, right? It's not real fair. It just isn't real fair, and it shouldn't be. So that's a problem. And then there's another problem, which is impossible, right? Because I want everything, right? And I'm going to express that I want everything. I don't agree with people who think you shouldn't want a whole lot. If it's if society is such that everybody can have everything they want, then everybody ought to want as much as they can possibly benefit from. But if you think to yourself then, well, but people aren't like that. People realize that it really isn't that you should have everything you want. You should just have everything that's responsible. But how do you know what's responsible? You don't know what's responsible unless you have some correlation between what's being asked for and what goes into producing it, both the labor and the resources and everything else. So the reason why you need some kind of allocation system and you need to remunerate not just need is because, we'll see the allocation system next time, is because this doesn't work. We don't live in nirvana where it all grows on trees. How much air do you get? Well, you get as much as you need, right? And there's no problem there because nobody takes more and there's plenty available. But that's not true of other things, right? Some goods are that way, but most goods aren't that way. And there's sometime in the future, if we don't win, even oxygen won't be that way. We'll have to pay for it, right? So, because it'll be in short. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's soon, huh? Right. Okay, so that was the need thing, which is important. But now where does need come in with the question that was asked? Now suppose somebody can't work. How much do they get?
As much as they need.
That would be one way to say it. And it's certainly true with respect to one part of the problem. So for instance, suppose I can't work because I need a kidney machine, right? I get the kidney machine? Is that really expensive?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? But I just get it. Why do I just get it? Well, because we're humans and not squirrels. Because we do that. We think that a human, right? So society says we're going to insure people, in a sense. We're going to provide health. We're going to provide things that are needed in that way, right? Even though it's way more expensive than the average job, you know, average income. Let's say the average income is this, and I have some god-awful mess disease, or I get hit by a truck or whatever, and I need this just for my health. Well, I get this just for my health. Do I get anything more?
You have to live.
So I get what?
What you need on top of that.
Social.
Well,
average.
I get what?
Social average.
Yeah, I just get the average income. I get as if I had worked the average thing. I can't, but I would have if I could have. You know, we're not going to punish me for having gotten hit by a truck or whatever it is, so I get it. And that takes care of that. So it's really effort and sacrifice plus need. And the need kicks in when you have some special situation, you know, or when you just can't work. Including, let's say, you're between jobs. We punish you between jobs? What kind of nonsense is that? Right? So you get it there. You get the normal average income and so on. Yeah.
One question I have is, how do we determine if someone can't work? So what if I'm just a socially inept buffoon and I'm you know, depressed and I say, I can't work, I'm depressed, I'm unhappy. Or what if I'm a liar and I can work, but I'm just full of shit and I want to sit around and enjoy my consumed goods?
There is no such thing as a system which is completely immune to being cheated. Right? So we're not going to build such a system. But what's the answer? The answer is to ask, well, what is it that impedes or that judges such statements? Right? In our system, it's a boss, right, who has no human sympathies at all. But in a pari-econ, what is it? Well, it's your fellow workers. So if you go to your fellow workers, and you can all think about this for a few minutes, if you go to your fellow workers and say, well, you know, next month I should stay home because I'm feeling sad, and you really want to go to the beach, you know. I mean, are your fellow workers not going to pick this up or going to pick this up? Is the odds that they're going to be the best judges of whether or not this is a realistic thing or not? Suppose you try and say that you're working really, really, really hard. Who is it easier to fool, the manager or your fellow workers?
Manager.
Yeah, the manager. So in other words, we're getting to a situation where it's actually easier. Now, if it's a little harder, if it's a little easier, I don't want to debate the point. In other words, it's... These are real. This is not this is not a crystal system. This is not like a radio. This is a social process. And social processes are subject to error, to mistakes, to cheating, etc., etc. But you want to build a system which doesn't build in an incentive to cheat. Right? This is going to come up a lot when we do allocation. You want to build a system which makes it hard to cheat, hard and which the payoff is low, right? Etc., etc. And that's what I think it does when we look at it enough. Do you want to say something?
No.
No. I've smashed it, and it's thoroughly trounced now, and
well,
I can move on without worrying about it.
Well, about people with, like, mental illnesses, I mean...
Well, that's real.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, we have psychologists, and, I mean, I think that it would be good for the person with mental illness if, you know, if you were to say... I think it'd be really rare in a system that you're describing, yeah, that people would be trying to, like, go to the beach and stuff. We have a shorter work week.
You'd be going to the beach.
Yeah, I mean...
You'd be sick of the beach.
And primarily, we'd be doing what you really want to do anyway. I mean, you wouldn't constantly... I mean, a lot of the social problems I think we have is, like, escapism. It's escape from our everyday lives. And people just don't know what else to do
with
themselves.
Okay, but I agree with you. But the problem can be that we get into that mindset and we're sort of defending the good values and the good person, and we build a system which doesn't have proper incentives. I'm not saying you're not right. I think you are right. Right? And I think you're right. You're right. But you have to deal with the world when you're putting forward. And so you have to have a system which is immune to the criticisms. Right? So that criticism is going to be raised. Any criticism that anybody can come up with is going to be raised. And you want to be able to build a system which is, if not immune to the criticisms, at least, you know, not kind of torpedo because of them. Yeah.
You mentioned the beach.
Some of this is allocation, and we're going to get to it. But go ahead.
Well, you mentioned the beach. I was wondering, maybe this is an allocation, but what determines who lives in Kansas and who lives in L.A.?
Well, partly where you are. But... In other words, where you were at first. But if you want to go to L.A., you go to L.A. I mean, you have to have a living group. I mean, you have to enter a neighborhood. You have to get a house, all the kinds of things. It is not nirvana again. Everybody can't do everything. But if it's onerous to be in Kansas and it's lovely to be in L.A., L.A. costs a lot, and Kansas doesn't. And it's not the case that you can live in L.A. by virtue of having gotten all that money by ripping it off. You can only get all that money by having worked your ass off. And maybe there isn't so much money, in which case all of LA's coast is public, which it would be.
Okay.
Maybe a lot less.
I mean, there's no such thing as, right, it's probably all public.
Okay.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So in other words, the value of things, there's exchange. In other words, there are things, that's why you can't just do it on need, because if you just do everything on need, there's no price to anything. And here goes everybody, right, to the ocean. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
So this is
like lemmings. Well, you know, I mean, the push is so great that everybody will be singing and dancing until they start getting pushed off into the ocean, and drowning.
But I always like the idea of not having like private beaches and.
See, when somebody says, I don't get into that stuff. That is to say, I think you can start quickly getting into details that take you too far, and now you're starting. It's fun,
yeah,
and we could talk about it, right? But you can have your opinion about it. But you don't want to get into the mindset that what you think today is what people should do 40 years from now in a participatory economy, right? They're going to do what they do, right? In other words, what you're setting up is a vehicle, a method, a structure, which embodies the values that you believe in, and the outcomes that come out of it are the outcomes that come out of it, right? And now I have a feeling we know what a lot of the outcomes will be. Right, and in that case, I mean, what are we going to do with the? I don't know about this house. Maybe this house has to become a library or something. But surely the huge houses down there that are on the water, I mean, they're going to be daycare centers or schools or something. There isn't going to be somebody living in them, you know, two people. I mean, this is ridiculous enough, but that's mind-boggling. So that kind of stuff changes. Now, does it change overnight? The Pol Pot police come in and shoot them all? No, you know, but it does change over time. You can't see them if you walk out in that direction.
Yeah.
There's a road that goes out. It's like, you know, it's like a little gated community. It's huge houses on the wall. It's just an example. I mean, most people have no idea the way the rich live.
Yeah.
And, or the way the rich live in their 10 houses that are all. But these houses, I mean, those houses are not big time. But anyway.
You asked the question, how do you gauge how much work we do? We never got the answer to that.
No, but we have a little bit of it already. Because what did we say? We balance job complexes. Right? So how do we know how much work you do? There's two components.
Effort and sacrifice. Time.
No. Effort and sacrifice is like one and time, right? So how do we measure time?
How long you work.
Minutes,
seconds, hours.
Yeah, minutes, seconds, with a clock, right? It's not that hard. So the time part we've got under control, right? But you work a certain amount of time. Well, how long are you going to work?
As long as you want.
As little as possible.
bugger. Only you is going to work that way. Because you somehow have capitalism so tightly in there that it never leaves. No, but how long are people going to work? What's the work week going to be? What's the criteria? What's the judgment that's going to go on? We haven't done allocation yet, but what's the judgment that's going to go on that's going to determine how long the work week is? As against?
How much work needs to be done?
How much work needs to be done? How much work you want to be done? What changes? If we work less hours, what happens to the pie?
Smaller.
What happens to everybody's slice?
Smaller.
Smaller. So we all collectively have to decide, essentially, how much pie we want. And if we want to do the average, and that's the amount of pie we want, then the pie has to be big enough so that that's the average, right? Okay, so we might decide 40 hours or 70 hours or 30 hours or 20 hours, and when we do that, what are we doing? We are reducing or increasing our consumption as against our leisure, which is supposed to be a trade-off that's done in market systems too, but it's not. Market systems drive toward more and more hours, regardless of anybody's preference. But in this system, it really is according to your preference. So anyway, we were doing measuring of effort. So one part of the measure is time, right? And what's the other part of the measure? You're in a balanced job complex. So you don't have to pay much attention to the question of whether or not you're doing more onerous work, because you're not, right? If you've got the job complex is balanced. But you might be doing what? Working more or less hard. So who's going to judge that?
You.
You. In nirvana. But short of nirvana, who's going
to
judge that?
How long it takes to get the job done well?
Well, but fellow workers, one thing that they'll take into account is whether or not there's any output or whether or not at the end of the day there's nothing because you're in the bathroom all day, or because you were reading a book instead of working. So they might judge it in a million ways, but they're going to be the ones who judge it. How do we know that's the answer? Because that's all there is. Who else would it be? Right? We don't have any coordinator class. We don't have any owner. It must be your fellow workers because that's what there is. So your fellow workers are going to judge this sort of thing. How will it happen? Well, like Robin and I disagree about this. It's hardly a, blood, death, fight it out disagreement, but there's not many things we disagree about, so here's one of them. He thinks, I think because he's an economist, right, and I think, and he would say, Albert thinks because his head is floating around in the clouds, so he, because he's an economist, I think because my head is up in the clouds, he thinks that people's concern with fairness and justice is very high, and so people will want the amount that is remunerated to accord to a high percentage with the amount of effort and sacrifice. So if you think of it in terms of grades, right, mm-hmm. where one is average, right? So he thinks somebody in a workplace, that most workplaces are going to want to be able to grade, or let's make it 50 as average. He thinks that workplaces are going to want to be able to, in a sense, grade each worker all the way from 50 to 100 and from 50 to, let's say, 30, because below that you wouldn't, you're just fired or something. You're not working. Something's wrong. Something has to be done. But you see a high degree of gradation. And so he thinks that there would be what? Part of the tasks in the workplace would be like a personnel task that's associated with this kind of judgment, right? Now, are those personnel workers highly empowered, by the way?
Yeah.
Are they?
The same as everyone else.
Because?
Balanced job.
Right. Right? Just because you have a function which all of a sudden you're nervous, right? Ooh, that's a manager. Ooh. It's a managerial function, or it's an assessment function, or it's a conceptual function, or it's a surgical function. But that doesn't mean that the person who has it has a monopoly on functions. Just happens to be the one that they do part of the time and they do other stuff. They're not better prepared to make decisions, right? Okay, so he thinks that. I think, nonsense, 98% of workplaces will decide, on average, to an overwhelming degree, everybody works same effort and sacrifice. If they work a little longer, they get a little more. If they work a little more shorter, they get a little less. It's not worth the time and trouble to do the high gradations. What we'll do instead is we'll assume as a default that you get the average. And if fellow workers want to claim that somebody is working more, you can be rewarded more, say two or three steps. And if they say claim that you're, working less, that you're shirking, you can get one or two or three steps less. And so we disagree. But the point is, there's no fighting about it, right? Because who's going to decide this? Well, the workers in the workplaces and what they set up.
Right? But they're going to be different for different workplaces.
So. Nothing says that that what we've got here is some principles, and what we have here is some basic structures. There'll be lots of variety. Where are we? We're done? Are we already into the next one?
No.
I didn't go that long, did I? No, it's 3 o'clock. We're just barely done. Okay, so there can be lots of diversity. You can implement values and principles with differences. Right? So one workplace might have one way, and another workplace might have another way, not least because the workplaces are different places, and they have different stuff going on, and it just makes sense to treat things a little bit differently. Right? What's wrong with that?
Over there, you might only have to work 10 hours a week.
No. That's not the way it works. I mean, if the average balance, if average is 30 hours a week at an average level, the workplace can't decide that average is 20 hours a week.
Okay, so this average is decided for the whole society.
Sure. But then it depends, you know, whether or not you're working harder. You're exerting way more or less. Now, actually, it's more complicated. How you do that is more complicated, but that's what you're doing. Right? It's a little more complicated. No, nobody has written something that is critical, but you can think about it. It's one thing to say that that we don't want to reward you more than you if you're out cutting cane and you have better tools, right? But as a society, what do we want cane cutters to be using?
Better tools.
So even though we're not rewarding you, the individual, right, we have to have some way in a society to elicit the better result. Just like we want Mozart to compose some of the time, right? We also want tools to be used well. We want workplaces to utilize the creative capacity of the workers up to full level. And we want them to utilize technologies and techniques up to full level. We don't want to reward individuals for doing that, right? But we do want to pay attention to output of workplaces. We'll come to that when we do allocation, among other things. Is everybody? I mean, all right. So it's not such a big deal, you know. Remuneration according to effort and sacrifice, balanced job complex. Oh, and then souls, right? So because we got to do the decision making, and we got to do it in proportion to whatever. So we have a workplace council, and there are decisions that affect the whole workplace. The workplace council makes them. We got the promotion department or the whatever it is, right? Probably they're working within the rubric that was decided by the whole workplace, but they're certainly apportioning their activities each day. Just them deciding. Right, and they're using whatever norms, one person, one vote, majority rule, three quarters rule, consensus, whatever it is that seems to accord best with each person having an influence in proportion as they're affected. Who chooses that? They do. Right? Who chooses how to do that? They do.
Is there a way in capitalist society that the function of the workers' council in terms of evaluating effort and sacrifice is taken care of?
Sure, you have people who run it well.
The manager?
Not really, no, because nobody cares. That is, they don't reward output. They reward, by and large, they reward bargaining power. But there is a sense in which output is a component of bargaining power. In other words, where does Michael Jordan's bargaining power come from? Does he have a big club that he carries around? No. So where does his bargaining power come from?
His skills.
It comes from his output. So it actually is highly, highly correlated, right? It isn't always correlated, but in his case, it's highly correlated. His power doesn't come from being black, right? It comes from being from the output that he can contribute to the basketball team over which he has a relative monopoly, right? That's what gives him the power, and that can give you power. That's why do doctors have more power? Well, because they have arranged things in such a way they don't have a monopoly on genes, right? But they have a monopoly on certain skills and knowledge. And that gives them more bargaining power. They can withhold it, right? And they can, but that's not the way anything works in this thing. There's no such thing. There just isn't any bargaining power. So what do we still have to do? We still have to do allocation. We still have to do, you know, how much goes where? How much work? How does the workplace know how much to produce, right? How do the consumers know how much to consume? How does the two get into mesh? What replaces markets, right? We don't have that yet. Okay.
Do we have an easy three?